My name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland.
In April 2011, when Radio Memphis was born, the first thought that came to mind was coming up with some type of a logo. Well, the name of the company that owns Radio Memphis is Pirate Radio Studios, so we wanted to incorporate some type of an idea of a pirate, and why not? Let's just have a skull in there. So that's all I took to the artist whom you're going to meet now. Brian McMurray is his name, and he's the father of Roger.
How are you guys doing in Deutschland?
I don't know. The station is doing well in Deutschland. You're going to Deutschland when? When are you headed over there?
July the 14th.
July the 14th.
I'm going to be in Deutschland.
How long are you going to be there?
I'm going to be there for a month. I'm leaving the 10th of August. So just shy of 28 days. I'll be there studying German in Eichstätt.
Well, you've been studying German for a while now.
Mm-hmm. This will be middle of the second year. So, yeah, or middle of the third year.
You going to do any art schooling over there?
Yeah, actually, I have to. I applied for a Gilman scholarship, which requires a follow-up kind of project.
Yeah.
And if I get accepted to it, I have to do a project for that. And my project is going to be an art project based off of the German people that I meet there.
And no study of Hitler's watercolors?
Oh, no, I have some of them personally, but I'm very interested in them.
Actually, you have a Hitler watercolor?
No, I can't back that up. I totally don't
know. Yeah, it's hanging in my bathroom. They fetch a pretty good couple of bucks, from my understanding.
Yeah, I mean, they're really popular. I mean, obviously, I don't think they would be if he hadn't killed, you know, a whole bunch of people. But just the idea that he was on one path and then chose another.
Yeah.
There's a movie called Max about his art broker when he was trying to become a famous artist.
I think I've seen this film.
It's a really good movie, but it talks about how he started to use politics as a form of art.
Yeah.
He replaced visual arts with political arts.
And, yeah.
You know, and it turned into what it did.
Sort of like the idea that Fidel Castro, when he was playing for the Yankees sub-organization, had he not blown his knee out, he'd have been pitching for the Yankees.
Oh, absolutely. And,
yeah.
And damn the revolution. I'm making money.
I'm making money. I'm a capitalist pig now, just like, you know, the way I'm going to be.
It's all about that perspective, man.
We've been rolling for a while now.
Oh, well, hello, Radioland.
For those that don't know the story, Brian was like one of the first people I spoke to about the whole concept behind Radio Memphis. And I needed to put a face on it.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, I had to create some sort of imaging for it.
Yeah,
image, I should say.
I couldn't have been more excited about it when you first started talking about it. I'd seen a lot of ideas for a little small kind of podcast type stuff, like what we're doing here, sort of
right
now as a supplement to Radio Memphis, but not really anything as bold. That's what you wanted to do with Radio Memphis.
Yeah.
At that point. And when you came to me and talked to me about it, I just thought it was amazing. Amazeballs, in fact.
I get a lot of email with that in there now. Amazeballs.
I bet so. But I had noticed through some conversations that we'd had before that how interested you are in history and especially the history of piracy.
And, yeah. Oh yeah. The golden age. Yeah.
Yeah. And
not so much the Somalians.
No. I mean, you know, back in the R and matey when they didn't really talk like that at all, but that's what we think of.
Right.
So I tried my best to kind of put out that all together for what you wanted for a face of Radio Memphis. And, it seemed, I tried to do something that was kind of classic and edgy at the same time, and it harkens back to kind of that pirate spirit that the punk rockers had back in the 70s.
Oh, Lord, yeah, because that was the whole sound that I was going for, too, was the Pirates of the North Atlantic, and, you know, from the early 60s into the 70s, and now they're all on the web, so there's not really pirating much of anything these days.
No. But that's a good thing, you know, the opening of the Internet made us able to take kind of information back.
Right.
To a degree, and you've done it swimmingly. as far as I'm concerned.
It seems like it's going fairly well. I mean, we're sitting in a little over 127 countries. My wife likes to ask me from time to time, how many countries are there? And I said, it depends on any given day.
And who you ask,
exactly. And, you know, Ukraine right now, they're trying to solve their problems. But
I think there's 26 infant countries right there. Right?
Yeah, so that's all part of it. So, you know, I said, I don't really care about so much that number. The fact that somebody in Namibia is listening, I find kind of amusing.
Not only amusing, but just exciting.
Yeah, it is,
you know,
exciting.
It's that someone who may or may not even speak the same language that you speak,
right,
can tap into that kind of universal language of music. And I know that sounds really cheesy, but I mean, music and mathematics are universal languages.
Oh, sure.
I think it's awesome.
It is awesome, and we've got a good group of folks that have really devoted a lot of their time and energy and effort into this thing. And you know, hence going back to the idea of the Roger is the logo we're referring to. Mm-hmm. He's got him a name, RODGER, of course.
There you go.
And he's the headphone he's the skull wearing the headphones. And the mouth, of course, this is one of the most fascinating things, and I point this out to people all the time, that the mouth is a waveform.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to give you that indication of sound being your medium.
Yeah.
And no better way to do that than the source of that sound is your mouth, your larynx.
Yeah.
And so that jagged, toothy grin that he's got.
Oh, yeah.
Also has a tie to your art form. So
there was somebody I was speaking with not long ago who suggested that we take that waveform and digitize it and play it back.
There's no telling what that is.
I tell people all the time, you know, it actually, you know, it's our image guy going, Radio Memphis. There's no telling what kind of sound would come out of his face if that was.
No, it's a Swedish porn track is what it is.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. Hello, Sweden. We have a lot of listeners up that way.
Oh, I'm glad.
But yeah, I dig the retro headphones on him and, you know, that 60s, 70s vibe that you were talking about with, you know, encompassing the whole pirate thing.
And that's a lot of fun to me, and that era in history is one of the, you know, in music anyway, is one of my favorite eras of rock. And I've actually played several times in my downtime and in my free time with how can I effectively redesign Roger and give you this new face of Radio Memphis. And every time I do it, I end up deleting it because there may be a point where I come up with something good to streamline him, but everything else seems like a pale copy of a copy.
Yeah, because we've all talked about it. Did you need something?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm just I'm fidgeting.
That's quite all right. No, I didn't know if I need to get you something or anything.
No.
Not that I have anything to give you, but I've got some butane down here in a.
Oh, no, I'm fine. I've got my bubbler.
Good. Diana and I, she's our promotions director, she and I have talked about down the way perhaps giving Roger a facelift, if you will, and bringing him into a different time. And I'm with you. The more I look at it, the more I was like, oh, I'm screwing with something here that I don't need to be screwing with.
I think that we will, I feel like that it'll be very easy to give you some supplementary things to surround Roger with.
It'd be better that way, yeah.
Yeah, and to give you some stuff. Because, like, doing your holiday stuff. And,
right.
You know, and throwing in the St. Patrick's Day and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I think that's a really good springboard for that. And with surrounding, you know, events and whatnot. But it seems like that grinning old skull, you know, in my mind, is kind of the center of your universe there.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, even if he had different headphones on, I think it would diminish him a little bit because, you know, the only thing I would ever really want to see different is maybe him turning slightly off of the, you know, on the axis a little bit. You know,
I can totally do that, I think.
You know, that kind of that almost a three-dimensional vibe to it,
mm-hmm.
You know, without it looking like a Terminator skull.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, no, well, you have a collection of skulls that
yeah,
you've amassed.
Only a few of them are real.
You have actually some real ones laying around, do you?
I've got one or two real ones.
Yeah.
I got a, most of them are, you know, cheap stuff that I really liked or, you know, snatched up in New Orleans or whatever. But
the polyurethane ones?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, whose did the real ones belong to?
I haven't the faintest clue. I'm pretty sure that was one of them was an Asian woman.
Yeah.
Because like 90% of the skulls that you get through medical supply are Asian women.
Yeah.
And, and then I've got a couple of few fragments of another one. That you know,
that's odd that's just Asian women, but I know why. If you apply a little bit of thought to that,
it's
a bit morbid, a little creepy to think about.
Absolutely creepy to think about. But I mean, part of unfortunately for me and everyone that I know, that's part of what draws me to that kind of stuff is
is the morbidity of it.
Is the morbidity of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. I still wear the hate print shirts around.
Oh, awesome.
from time to time.
That was a complete failure of a business, but it was a lot of fun.
I don't know how around the people that I deal with, mm-hmm. the rock and roll people, when they see those if I had a hammer,
yeah,
I'd beat your fucking head in. That one is good. The casket company gets a lot of attention.
I like
mostly
that one.
Ooh.
Well, it's playing off of once again the 70s is those the you know crazy Mike's used car salesman
right.
and that kind of thing. You know, I'll eat my hat if you can find a better deal. So,
in fact, just the other day I had the all my problems were at the bottom of a rock quarry.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
the bone saw on it.
Oh, that bone saw is one of my favorites.
Well, people will look at it and I go, they kind of cock their head at it for a second. They don't quite think about it. And I go, bone saw. Oh, yeah. One that I and you gave me the whole run of them. Is the thing in business anymore? Hate Prince?
No, Hate Prince isn't around anymore. I still have like you know I'm that weird guy that has a truckload of shirts that he couldn't sell.
Right.
We have talked about reviving it to some degree, maybe under a different banner or under a different name, and maybe making that aspect of it just a facet of the business as opposed to because at that point those vulgar shirts were the core of that business.
Well, yeah, I could see why. Yes.
And, but
vulgar is a good way to put it.
Vulgarity. And I was kind of going off of a Friedrich Nietzsche kind of thing, like where are your limits of morality? And you know, and I know that seems really deep for a guy that just prints t-shirts, but
well, when you have a shirt that has a child's drawing of a house and a body hanging from the tree,
yeah.
and it says home is where the hurt is.
Yeah.
That's not just vulgar. That gets someone's attention and their mind turning in different ways.
Right, that borderlines on Freudian, you know. But hello, kitty.
Yeah, that's lucky he wanders around here.
He starts messing with those wires too much. He won't be all that lucky anymore.
He's named Lucky because he's lucky to be here, but my wife named him that because he's black.
Oh, I see.
He's a black cat. And in Ireland, a black cat that crosses your path is a sign of good luck.
Ah, as opposed to anywhere else.
As opposed to anywhere else. And if a bird craps on your car, that's a sign of good luck as well.
You know, being Irish, I think that speaks volumes about our national personality. As somebody shot my wife. A good day for me.
We're trying to get back over there. I think we're going to be over there this summer ourselves. So
fantastic.
So we may cross paths at some point. I don't think you'll be able to escape out of Germany. Pardon the pun, but
they're not watching that close anymore.
not anymore. They're not killing comedians like they used to. And in the position I may be in, I don't know that I might be able to escape out of Ireland because we'll be stuck with the in-laws and.
I understand.
The outlaws and all of that. And and that's all on a dairy farm. And they keep me away from technology when this happens because they know that I'll get on the line somewhere and I'll be sending out text messages, come get me.
That's perfect. Well, I tell you what, we'll meet up in Luxembourg. And
that's about right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, they have these wood bench flights out of Ireland. And they're like $20 anywhere in Europe.
Really?
One way. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're flying with chickens and goats, and you know, there's no seat belts on the plane, and there's a couple of wood benches that go from the cockpit to the tail, and you're all kind of looking at each other. That's about it.
That's beautiful.
Oh yeah. They want to introduce one of those deals out from New York to Galway, and it's like $35 one way.
Wow.
Yeah, Ryanair I think has been looking into that.
That's pretty cool.
And I told Joe about it, and I said. I said, this thing may stop off in Greenland for a week. We don't know, you know. you may be, it may be sort of like a Viking ship for airlines. You know, everybody's having to turn a crank. You know? one of those things.
Welcome to Greenland.
Next stop, you know, Iceland. So yeah, we're getting ready to do all of that. And
well, that's amazing. You know what? I think just because you keep saying that you don't like the word amazing, that's the first thing that pops into my head. Every
I know.
Time.
I and I find myself in that same aspect because I was quite serious about that. I was watching the Olympics and these commercials were coming on and these kids and all them were going, "Oh, this is amazing." And it, you know, and it's not just the word amazing, it was amazing. It's mm-hmm. like they were singing it. And it's like, "Stop it. You don't know what amazing is."
No, no clue.
You know, Randy, now that's an amazing person. That was the only thing that really came to mind when I recorded the amazing Randy.
The amazing Randy. Well, I mean, it's almost like, you know, in the 60s and 70s again, awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the literal definition of awesome is basically to be in the presence of God, like to be struck dumb with the enormity of what you're witnessing.
That's, and we have, I am in awe.
Right. We have diminish that into, like, you know, descriptions for a cheeseburger, and that's just not what that word means.
Yeah, you're right, but how was a cheeseburger? It was awesome.
Yeah, like a deep-fried onion is an awesome blossom, and that's bullshit.
Yeah, right? That is so true, because it's not going to forgive you of your sins.
No, absolutely not.
Although it might go a long ways, depending on what mood he's in, right?
And amazement, you know, to be amazed, is almost that same kind of feeling, to be standing in the presence of something that is so grand and so big that you just can't soak
like
it all.
Like the Grand Canyon.
Right. That is amazing.
Yes.
You know, a hole in the ground that's over a mile deep and that is so wide that there's atmospheric perspective from one side of the other, you know.
Yeah.
And
the donkeys that walk the trails, you know. Yeah, that's a pretty amazing feat right there, really.
Those things can see all four of their feet at once.
So. do you remember the show That's Incredible?
Yeah, years ago.
Yeah, with Crosby, what's her name? Kathy Lee Crosby and the man, John Davidson, the man with the hair.
That's right, yeah. The thing.
The helmet hair.
I'm sorry, I'm miming on radio.
I think people somehow managed to get, they go, I think I know what he just did. speaking of miming and stuff like that, you still working with Freak Engine?
I do Freak Engine occasionally. We still do a show once a month on the first Friday of every month, but we thought for a moment that it might not survive. We got down to just a couple of few troop members, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we just got saved by a bunch of young kids that wanted to come and play with us again. So last 2 months have been really good shows and with really strong audiences. And
well,
just
that's
the
awesome
old days.
It's funny how that works out, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, we were really considering, like, whoa, this might have to end in June, you know, after a 16-year run.
Wow.
And we were, you know, like, where does this come from? And
so it was just like two of you left?
Yeah, I mean, literally three. There was, and you know, one of us had to run the lights.
Hold on a second. Okay, it was a light.
Now give me something that you wouldn't find in your kitchen drawer, right? It's just, and it was just, we were scared, but. Now our troop is up to about 8 people.
Oh, that's awesome. That's about where you want it to be, right?
Yeah, somewhere between 8 and 10 is perfect.
Yeah.
No one gets the opportunity to steamroll anybody else, and, you know, everyone gets a chance to play, and it's a 2.5-hour show, and we're not all bedraggled by the end of it.
Right.
And
you still over at Theater Works?
Yeah, we're doing it at Theater Works. Barring, you know, being locked out on show night, we'll continue to do it.
The guy that runs the place forgets that there's a show.
We've had something like that happen recently. Yes. bunch of frantic texting at 11:30 when the doors were supposed to be open 30 minutes ago.
Oops, sorry, I forgot all about it.
Sorry it's snowing, folks, but we'll get you.
With that parking garage that they opened up over there, which is really kind of, that's a comedy act in and of itself.
Oh, yeah, no kidding, right?
Because nobody's using the thing, because it's like, why pay $3 to park in a thing where there's free parking right there at it?
Yeah.
You know, right next
course.
To it.
And, but...
Because you were worried about that.
Yeah, we were. We were scared that our audience would be driven away because we've been charging $5 a head for the last 16 years.
Yeah.
And we don't think that it's fair at this point to raise the prices if we can help it.
Because, I think it's wise, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most fun you can have for $5 with your clothes on.
Yeah.
And we don't want to drive away our young audience who, you know, probably is deciding whether to eat ramen or, you know...
Get some entertainment.
Right.
Some late-night entertainment.
So that's what we want to do for them. And a full house just barely covers the bills, but... You know, let's be honest, I have never thought that I was going to become a millionaire doing improv.
Whoever thinks that showbiz becomes a $1 million operation when you get into it, I mean, that's all lightning in a bottle.
Absolutely. I mean, and the only reason anyone would ever think that is because you see these faces on TV that have done it, and but you don't see all the people that they had to, you know,
sleep with
or slip under the door behind or, yeah. You know, and a lot of that stuff is that way, you know. You pretty much got to step on somebody to get into the perfect position when you're not doing it. You're on your own to be seen by that right person.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to get in front of that right guy.
There's that whole thing about, you know, especially in radio, people will say, "Well, I've met so and so who's on the air or this person, and man, that guy's an asshole." And it's like, well, yeah, there's a kind of a reason for that. You know,
yeah, at some level
it is.
There has to be a ruthlessness in your spirit. You have to have that I don't know, I don't want to call it, go so far as to say a predatorial spirit, but you definitely have to be able to see what you want and go after it and really not let anything get in your way.
Right.
And that doesn't always make you a bad person. I mean, for God's sake, Tom Hanks might just give you the shirt off of his back if you ran into him on the street.
Pretty much, yeah.
So he's not, but in a professional setting, I'm sure he does have a very predatorial sense of this is what I want and this is where I'm going and this is my decision.
Well, as competitive as the business is, whether it's, you know, making movies or being on the radio or working on a stage somewhere, you know, you have to have that that unfortunate thing of, you know, hey, tough luck, pal, you know.
Exactly.
But don't get in my way.
Right. I feel terrible for you. But I'm still taking your spot.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, and I never thought that I was going to be famous. I'm not ever going to be famous.
You don't know that. You're not dead yet.
I ain't dead yet. But, you know, I'm a visual artist, so the likelihood is I might be famous after I'm dead.
It tastes better after you're dead.
It tastes a lot better after you're dead.
You got to just start churning out some work, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm working on a master's copy of a Hans Memling painting. Hans Memling was a northern or a pre-Renaissance painter. He painted lots of demons and hell pits and stuff like that.
Awesome.
And I know that, once again, a lot of my stuff is dark, but there's this awesome picture of a demon, and its wings are splayed, but it has a blue face in its abdomen. And I'm not really sure exactly what I've been trying to figure out what that means, that
or this, who it is.
Yeah, or who it is, or what it represents. It struck me enough that I'm working on painting it now.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm doing a copy of it in oils.
I have a picture hanging in here that my wife and I found on a sidewalk when somebody had moved out, and I saw it from a distance and I walked over to it. It just called to me. You know, that's how art works.
Of course.
It speaks to you. And in this particular case, from about 6 feet away. And I walked over to it and I looked at it and I went, oh my God, this is the most awesome thing I have ever seen. And of course, my wife was with me, and she's looking at it. She goes, oh, this is horrible. You can't, no, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to hang it up in here. It's right over your shoulder over there. If you have to get over there and go take a look at it,
I certainly will.
There's actually a story behind it. There is some type of a large predatory bird that has a baby in its talons, and it is hauling this, and that baby has quite a terrified look on his face, obviously.
Yes, it does.
And if you look very carefully, he's leaving a little stream of wee. And I thought, this is just an incredible picture. It's not that I don't have a thing for babies like that. It's just that somebody sat down at their easel with a blank canvas, and that came to mind. You know, and I was just like, what possessed somebody to do this? So obviously not knowing because there's no signature on it.
Right.
There's nothing to this. So I took a picture of it, mm-hmm. and I uploaded it to Google's image search and hit go. And back came story after story after story about that image. And it is about Greek mythology. It takes place in Greek mythology. There was a kid who was the bartender to the gods, if you will. He didn't want to be there on Mount Olympus. So he said, screw you guys, I'm out of here. And he came to Earth and gave humans mead and wine.
Oh, heavens no.
And as a result, Zeus and company sent the big ass bird to come haul his ass back up to the mountain, and that's what that is.
Wow.
And I can't think of the little boy's name, but I want to say it's like Hieronymus, but I don't think that's right. It's certainly not Prometheus, but
that's, well, I mean, it's a similar story, obviously. You know, bringing fire to the humans gets you punished. And
right.
Apparently bringing beer to us does, too.
Well, the gods are upset. They go, oh, God, now they got beer. We're boned now. We're all sorts of messed up. But that's what that picture is.
That's beautiful.
It's a better story than it is a piece of work.
If I were to caption that picture before you told me that story, it would have been, I love kids, but I could never eat a whole one.
Yeah, because it's just a tremendous piece of work. I need to, when we post this podcast, I'll take a picture of it and add it to my blog page so people will know what we're talking about. But
that's perfect.
Yeah, because the story behind it is, you know. But that's the age we live in. Had we not had the internet, I'd have seen that in a museum going, what twisted fuck did this?
Right.
He exactly. really hates babies.
It's funny that you mentioned the name Hieronymus.
Yeah.
When you mentioned that, because there's an artist named Hieronymus Bosch.
I've heard the name,
that
yes.
That painted a triptych. It's an altarpiece. It goes in a Catholic church. It's a beautiful altarpiece. But it is the most twisted thing I have ever seen in my entire life. And if I hadn't known it was painted in the 1600s, early 1600s, I would have sworn to you that it was a 20th century surrealist painter.
Right.
Like Dali or something like that. You should check it out sometime. It's called The Garden of Earthly Delights. And it's this massive painting.
I think I have seen this. And it's where they have... The devils, they're one side's hell and the other side's heaven, and mm-hmm. and there's
earth in between,
and like all the demons are, they got all these naked scared people all hanging around. Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Absolutely. And the demons have animals heads, and there are people like but believe it or not, to me the most disturbing one of all of them is the earth. Hell is bad, but hell's supposed to be bad, right?
Well, of course, yeah. That kind of goes without saying.
Eden or heaven is okay, other than the fact that it's just completely weird, right?
Yeah.
And the animals are out of whack. But earth, the things that people are... Because it's full of these naked figures, and they're all doing amazing things to one another, and I use the word amazing in the real sense.
You're going to be censoring yourself for the rest of your life over this.
Because there's a guy practicing, his florist skills in another person's rear end, and it's just all these things that people do to each other.
Is that the, you know, that piece I think was just in the news not long ago where there's somebody that is bent over something and their naked butt is there, and there's music, sheet music that had been written onto this guy's ass, and this art historian. I mean, I want to say this is like in early February, got a hold of this piece,
mm-hmm.
magnified that part because it was a small part of the big picture, right. And had it performed.
That's very possible that it could have been Hieronymus Bosch. Even if it wasn't that piece, he had this predisposition, let's say, for drawing the naked human rear end. And
he had a thing for butts, did he?
Yeah, and either, you know, things being put in or taken out, either, you know, willingly or not.
That's heaven and hell.
That's true.
depending on how you're
heaven, not as hell.
Right.
So that's Hieronymus Bosch. And if you get the opportunity, if any of you people out in Radio Land get the opportunity to check it out, prepare to be disturbed. But it's also an amazing piece once you put it in the framework of when it was done.
It's impressive. It's huge, right?
Yeah, it's for an altarpiece, it is rather huge because most of them were made to be transported. That you could fold them up like a, I don't know, a science project and leave with them.
Right.
But this one's fairly large.
Like a screen divider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when it folds up, there's this awesome orb in, you know, on the backside of it when it's closed. And when it opens up, it's just this amazing. And there have to be 500 human figures from one end of it to the other.
Yeah, and it almost has this kind of a Dr. Seuss look to it, if I'm not right. Or not,
yeah.
I'm mistaken.
Well, if Dr. Seuss were doing some
heavy acid.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot of... It's very colorful. There's a lot of color to it.
There is a lot of color. And it progressively gets darker as you get toward hell, but yes.
Well, yes. And it's... Aren't the people sort of angular and bulbous and...
Yeah, some of it's like some of them are in perfect proportion, and some of them start to twist and turn in ways that they're not made to do. And that doesn't just count in hell; it's all the way across.
That's people. They get a little twisted as they go on in life. Yeah.
Bosch had a real tap on, you know, our propensity for perversion, and I don't think it was just his. I think it was through observation too. He saw what people did.
Is art like that? Just a form of internal torture being released?
It can be. You know, certainly the stereotype is that the artist is tormented and tortured and twisted or weird in some way, and he has to let out these eccentricities through his art, his or her art. I don't know. I count myself, whereas I do have some interest in... the weird and twisted and things like that. I couldn't be more vanilla. I mean, I'm a family guy. I got kids, and you know, unless they write a book, and you have to take my word for it, I'm really good to them.
Right. Well, of course you are. Yeah.
And I can just see my kid did his book signing when he's 25. Dad kept speculums in the closet. I don't know.
In the skulls.
But, you know, we have a pretty good home life, and I count myself among one of the people in the world who try to, you know, aid society in some way or help.
You just have a propensity to play around in the dark a little.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with that.
And I think that everybody should have some willingness to see that side of themselves.
You kind of have to. If you keep it locked up in a box like that, I mean, that's why we like going to horror films for the most part.
Certainly so.
I think that taps into that a little bit. We like to be scared.
I like to quote a recent study that was done about people who are interested in serial killers are better conversationalists. And
yeah,
it's because they're willing to go into places that most people aren't willing to go, both in their mind and in their vocabulary and in the way that they communicate with each other. And so, and they go surprising places in conversation. They take it somewhere that you may not have expected.
Well, you just explained our morning guy, Doc. He's got a fascination with serial killers to the point that I think he's exchanged letters with Manson.
Very
not
nice.
That he physically killed anybody, but
it's
what's going on in his head.
Yes. And it's just an interest, because it's not always a link. Everyone thinks that, you know, just because I like flying kites doesn't mean I want to be a kite. You know, but the idea of being interested in human psychology, especially aberrant psychology.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to meet your buddy Doc, because...
He
sounds interesting.
He's fascinating.
And, you know, I've got a friend. Actually, for one of my assignments in college, I had to paint a picture of Jeffrey Dahmer out of hot sauce. I painted Jeffrey an image of Jeffrey
out of Tabasco? Sriracha?
Sriracha. And on a freezer door.
I see what you're going with, yeah.
Yeah, and because hot sauce covers the taste of, you know, rancid meat or whatever in the freezer door. And I know that that's very, very dark, but I had a buddy that saw an image of this, and he's like, how much would I have to pay you for you to paint that on my freezer.
You've got to be kidding me.
And he's like, no. He said, the only stipulation would be is like, you got to figure out some way to preserve it so it just won't ever go away.
Yeah, because the sriracha ain't going
right.
to hold up for long.
If the humidity gets up too much, it just melts off.
Yeah.
No matter how dry it ever gets. So,
did you do it? Did you take the job?
Yeah, I took the job. And it's a pretty neat little installation piece in dude's house.
Wow.
So.
I guess every time he goes to the freezer, he wants to be reminded about.
Well, I mean, he's got a rather twisted sense of humor. He actually does own some art that's been done by serial killers. We joked earlier about me having a Hitler, but
yeah.
he actually does have some of the lesser known serial killers, but he's got some of their artwork.
Yeah, like John Wayne Gacy, wasn't he? Didn't he do some?
Gacy was a very prolific painter, and a lot of people want that stuff. And it is the creepiest, because only it wouldn't be creepy if you didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
Like, if you looked at it, you think, oh, how adorable.
Yeah, the fact that he dressed as a clown and killed people, yeah.
Yeah, when you realize that this same person who painted this had over 40 bodies exhumed from out from under their house in Chicago.
Right.
Then you know, oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, because, yeah, you... You don't think about stuff like that. If word ever came out that Dali, Salvador Dali was a killer, well, of course the price of his paintings would probably skyrocket. But then again, it'd be a much more limited market for it.
And you know that bothers me a little bit about how art is valued. You know, the surrounding aspects of it are important, but it should only be historically important, not you know. Not collector desire go up because, oh, well, this man killed a man in a bar fight, or, you know, this guy raped somebody to death. It is interesting, don't get me wrong. I just don't think it should make his paintings worth millions of dollars when no one was buying them before.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You look at some pieces that are hanging in museums, and, of course, it's all in the beholder's eyes, what is attractive, what is not. And it's like, oh, this guy is a very famous artist. And I'm going, I don't know who you're talking about. You know, I didn't know who Jackson Pollock was until about 10 years ago.
Pollock had us duped, I think.
He had a lot of people duped.
He did.
He didn't do any of his work. He had a 4-year-old and a cat dipped in paint. I think that was pretty much it.
Painting with explosives.
But see, I understand why some people like that, because he did it.
Yes, that's true.
Because you could sit there and go, well, I could do that. Well, you didn't. He did.
That's right. And believe it or not, this is going to sound really snooty, but I really want to try to think of it this way. Is yes, it looks simple. And yes, you may have been able to do this on your own. But if you really think about his method and how he went about it and you look at it, only he could have done it in exactly that way, and he really was trying to communicate something to you. You know, Pollock painted on the floor. He pulled his canvases out and nailed them down, and he walked. He was in the painting.
In the piece, yeah.
His footprints, his cigarette ashes, one of the buttons off of his shirts fell into these paintings.
And he just left it there.
And he never moved it. So there is something to be said about that. Although, when I said that Pollock had us duped, somebody discovered his name in one of his paintings in big letters.
Oh, really?
Jackson Pollock, all the way across it. And it was one of his first ones that he sold. And there is some argument as to whether or not that first one was a gag and whether or not he was just messing around and seeing what he could sell. And then once he figured out he could, he really did develop it into an art form.
So was his name like stashed in the painting all the time?
His name is totally stashed into that painting. If you look at it.
Or in all of them, or just that
one? Mostly, it's in that one, but some of his contemporaries around the same time who were starting to experiment with this extreme version of expressionism that he was working on, they did the same thing. Their names are in some of their early works too. Like the entire composition is their name.
Or is it like on the pack of Camel cigarettes, the five naked people inside the Camel? You know what I'm talking about? In the shading of the Camel, there's the five.
No, that's true. There is some argument because of the extreme nature of the abstraction.
Right.
that it could be.
You could see what you want to see.
That's true.
You know, it's
that's
an really illusion. True. Yeah, you could kind of see. It's like, you know, finding Jesus in a cutout of a log. You
that's
know,
true. Yeah.
Or my toaster burns. You know, pictures of George Carlin. You know.
I want your toaster.
and it bites back.
Nice.
The toast does. But, no, I mean, it's all in perception, you know? Yeah,
that's true. I agree with that, that you know, this one art historian may just be seeing what he wants to see in the piece. But now, by that same token, the power of suggestion is also very strong. So now that he's told folks,
uh-huh.
they're going to see it. There's things that you can't unsee.
Right.
Once you see them.
I've been on the internet.
Yeah. That one cup thing, man.
Oh, Lord.
So, I mean.
Although the guy claims it's fake, but.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, that's an aspect of it, too, is that it's that Emperor's New Clothes syndrome where.
Right.
Where the people say, oh, well, there's this signature. On this painting was, oh yes, well I do see that because
yeah.
if I didn't see it then I would be dumb and not educated, so I see it.
Yeah, I see it, and you have no idea what you're looking at.
It's obviously right there.
Excuse me, sir, it's hanging upside down in your home.
There was an episode of Gilligan's Island where an artist goes it was a Russian artist and he was absolutely brutal. And I can't believe on this podcast I've already made this many references to that stupid show, but it was on earlier this afternoon, this particular episode, and it's funny we're talking about it, but he was an abstract artist. He was a Russian abstract artist who wound up on the island because he wanted to get away from society, and everybody thought he was bad. Well, it turns out he was horrible. So they make Gilligan, he would talk about how he was a painter, but he had failed art school 3 times in the 8th grade. So they pass him off as sort of this artist and create this whole thing. And long story short, this Russian guy wants Gilligan to teach him how to do this work, how to paint like this.
Uh-huh.
And Gilligan, of course, has no idea what he's doing. You know, because yeah. they wanted to get in the good graces of the Russian artist because he had the transmitter to call the boat that would take him back. And ultimately, he wound up getting in another boat and going to another island to be left alone.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to be. But see, like, I like hidden things in pictures like that, in works of art. And like what you did with Roger.
Yeah. And obviously, I'm not trying to up myself. That's to a much lesser degree. But yes, the idea that you use some hidden symbolism in your work. Does play it up, and if you like that kind of thing, I was mentioning in northern painters like Memling and Bosch.
Uh-huh.
Man, they love that kind of stuff. They hide all kinds
Easter eggs. Yeah.
This one guy, Peter Klaitz, he painted these still lives that were just, they looked like yard sale items, you know, just random collections of stuff, but
yeah.
Each thing in there has something to do with Christ and the resurrection. It's all religious.
Oh, I got you.
Every bit of it.
Yeah.
And there's even, like, scenes with moldy bread, and the moldy bread is, you know, the death and dying of the body,
uh-huh.
the body of Christ, uh-huh. and then the body of man,
right.
it rots away. So there's just all these amazing...
I hate you. I don't care if you use the word or not, you're not a kid, you know.
Yeah. Well, but there are all these intricate ways that it plays in together, and it's really cool. And not amazing at all, but
awesome,
but very cool. Yes,
it's awesome. It's yeah, our language in its relationship to pop culture has just been butchered.
Yes, it has.
It really has.
Oh. The totes my goats thing. I just want to strangle the life out of whoever did that.
I thankfully avoided that.
Is
it a meme that's out there?
Well, believe it or not, the Amazeballs thing and the Totes My Goats thing,
yeah.
that all came from one of my idols, James Earl Jones, and Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah.
They were doing these recreations of conversations that people had over the phone, and one of them was a pair of 13-year-old girls.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
And
it was already popular, but when that came out, it was like everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Because it's James Earl Jones.
Yeah, because he's like, to hear James Earl Jones say, he's cuter than an infinity plus an infinity. You know, and it just... And at the very end of it, he goes, totes my goats. It's just, that's it, you know.
Speaking of James Earl Jones, you did some voice work for me when I was at Rock 103, and we did the Darth Vader bit.
Yes.
And I still have all of those.
Do you?
I have every one of them.
Those were so fun.
I have them, and I went back and I listened to some of them, and and the some of the inside humor is just hysterical. Especially now.
Going back and seeing it.
And some of it, it's like, yeah, they were very, very dated pieces. But still, that whole thing was just so much fun. And it was, you know, what if Darth Vader ran Clear Channel? Which he kind of did.
Yeah, in a way. I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
As it turns out.
Despite what you may have heard, we do not accept food stamps as a form of advertising payment.
Doing voiceover work was always something I wanted to do as a kid. I wanted to be a voice in a cartoon more than anything else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Finding out later that I had very little talent for it made it bad. But
now the problem that I'm seeing now in this business, in voice work, so many people have been let out of the business. You know, corporations have just destroyed the industry. And as a result, you've got a lot of out-of-work guys out on the street. And they're taking up real estate jobs, or they're doing podcasts, or they're running internet radio stations. They're trying to eke out some type of a living. And one of the things that they know how to do best is do, like, commercials or voiceover work, or being a voice actor for, I don't know, something.
The Fairly Odd Parents or whatever.
Right. And what ultimately happens is that there's so many of these guys out there, so the price of doing the work goes down. What used to cost a couple hundred bucks to a client for me to voice a spot is now done for like $5.
Not even worth your time.
It's not even worth your time.
And that's very sad to me, because at one time I'm very excited to see all this technology bringing it to us. By the same token, I am upset to see the guys that did it the old way having to be pushed out of that in order for this to succeed, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, because that has to die enough that this gets a structure, that it somehow becomes non-amorphous. It has a form.
Right.
And you're working on creating that form in your microcosm here.
Trying to.
And there will be others that do that. And at some point, I assume, you guys will be on the forefront of homogenizing that form into something that can be accomplished.
Yeah, it probably won't happen in my lifetime.
You'd be surprised at how fast things happen.
Yeah, now. They do happen very quickly. The internet is the Wild West. It really is. There are no rules. There's, you know, any kid that has a record collection is a DJ in a radio station now.
Mm-hmm.
I like that that's out there. The more the merrier, jump on in, because eventually the wheat will be separated from the chaff, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that just don't have quality content are not going to survive. So I'm trying not to suck up the bandwidth too badly.
Well, I mean, that's another part of it. You know, to quote another one of my heroes, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So the professionals will lead the way in how that goes. The real classy guys that know what they're doing, that can figure this stuff out and get it straight.
We hope.
I'm positive of that. And then you'll have. That's one of the reasons the record companies haven't gone completely boobs up yet. You know, is because they still have a handle on how to get the music produced and done and out there.
Yeah.
And even though I can go and get a copy of Pro Tools and start pumping out music, it's not going to have the production value. It's not going to have the backing. It's not going to have the things that it needs. And you guys in internet radio are the ones who are going to figure out how to push that forward in your medium.
Yeah, the Radio Memphis is using equipment. 95% of the equipment we use – is not even designed for broadcast work. You know,
you make it work though.
Yeah, you have to, because no one has ever really developed that. That's within the cost points that I need for it to work at. You know,
and that's, you know, I heard your other podcast, and I actually priced out some Zooms.
Yeah,
and I did discover that there is an H4 Zoom.
Yeah, they go on. Yeah,
but even at that, it's still less than $300.
Yeah,
so the brand new one is still so that price point is amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing.
You get a free pass for using that when you live in Midtown. It's so amazing. Oh my goodness.
It's fabulous.
So maybe that's going to be the vocal crutch. Instead of amazing, I'll just say, you know, it's just absolutely fabulous. And say it like a straight man would, you know?
Yeah, don't go fabu or...
No, you gotta use the whole word, you know.
Don't say it in another language, no fabuloso.
I just had this cheeseburger, and by God, it was fabulous.
That's great.
Couldn't sound more vanilla.
No, I think we should just go to, you know, there's overwhelmed and underwhelmed. I think we should go with whelmed.
Just whelmed. Yeah,
we're whelmed.
I'm whelmed by this.
That was completely acceptable. That was passable.
That is indeed passable. Yeah, well, so there's that. So back to the Freak Engine thing before I forget, because I want to get you guys some visitors to the shows. You do it quarterly? Is that right? You're still doing the quarterly shows? Are you doing monthlies? You're doing weeklies? You're doing
we
every
do
night
monthly.
Thing? What the hell?
The very first Friday of every single month at midnight, if you show up with $5, we will give you a good time for 2.5 hours, and I don't know anybody else who can tell you that. So
First Friday of every month.
First Friday of every month at Theater Works here in Memphis.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for you guys that are out in the wide world, you're just kind of out in the cold until you can get here.
But not necessarily. Your website has web clips.
It does have web clips. And we're working on building that up more. And that's one of the reasons I was looking at that Zoom, because I wanted to be able to capture the sound in that theater better than we're able to.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I got it was that when I'm videotaping something, I'll use that as my audio source, because camera audio is horrible.
It is. It's just terrible.
So if you've got that in a fairly cool spot to record from, sync it up later, boom. Sounds great. Sounds like $1 million.
I thought we might try to use it like a boom mic, just like a centralized location over the stage, hanging up upside down, turned on right before the show starts, and then we'll sync it up with the video as it goes on.
Before you get out of here, I'll show you the thing, the little minion.
Very cool.
Yeah, it doesn't weigh anything, and that's how some lower budgeted films are being shot now. Is they're taking that thing and sticking it on a boom, and or better yet, you can. It's got a mic external plug to it, so if you're using a shotgun, put that up there, and then run a cable down to the thing in your hand. You're turning it off and on here, and it saves files and it'll go.
Magnificent.
It's fabulous.
It's acceptable.
It's acceptable. And with a little SD card in there, there's no tape to screw up. As long as you don't get around a nuclear device that's about to go off, you're good to go.
Oh, well, then it won't work for us then. No.
Because of the things that you guys are getting into over there.
Those isotopes just really mess with everything digital.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear Freak Engine has survived.
It had a temporary crisis, but I think that our hiccup is over with, and we're going forward. So,
well, yeah. Next time you have that, give me a call. I'll step in.
Good.
I don't know what I would do for you guys.
Come play pretend, because that's exactly what we do. You know, and just have fun.
I do that every day. I pretend I'm on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I do it every
when
day
it's
for
really
six
just the internet.
How many times have I heard that? So what dial are you on?
WWW.
Yeah, I'm on the World Wide Web there, babe. So I can't listen to this in my car? Yeah, you can, yeah.
You got to hook it up to your iPhone or your
Android. Or whatever smartphone you got. There's a thing now, I went through a software update on my iPhone. And before you do the thing, it tells you what they're updating. And mm-hmm. it's now CarPlay enabled. And actually call it CarPlay. One word. C-A-R, capital P-L-A-Y. CarPlay.
CarPlay.
So in case you have a car that is CarPlay enabled, you're ready to go.
Oh, you just got to just sit it down next to you and you're off at the races.
You don't have to take the damn thing out of your pocket. You get into your car, you kick it on, the little the dashboard device, the tablet that's embedded into the dashboard lights up, and it automatically it Bluetooths your ass into this thing, and you're sequenced up and synced up and all this stuff. All of your apps are now laying there on your dashboard.
Wow.
You just touch the... Actually, you don't have to touch it. I think there's a button on a lot of steering wheels that go, you know...
You're going to touch it.
Go ahead, touch it.
Don't you touch it. So, yeah, now CarPlay is a thing now. And what the reason I looked it up, Apple is wanting to get into your car now.
I'm whelmed.
Yeah, I am quite whelmed over this.
I'm whelmed.
Yeah, they've already got the Apple Radio, Apple TV. Now they're getting into Apple Car.
I want to see the Apple symbol on the side of medical devices next. I want them taking care of me. I want to be hooked up to every Apple.
That's what an iPad is.
Yeah, I mean, did you hear about the gag apps that they were putting out on these things so that people would intentionally so that people would break their iPads?
Oh, are you talking about the iOS update that made it look like there was water in it, or if you put it, it was made a waterproof?
Yeah, the instant waterproof app was a good one. Yeah. The scale app was my favorite.
You could stand on your phone.
Yeah, that you turn the app on. It says, "Now lay me on the ground and stand on me, and I'll give you your weight." Not
for $4.99,
right? So there are a few people with the pirate spirit out there telling you to, you know, get off the electric tit a little bit and use it for something that's good. Use it for the acceptable device that it is, the awesome, amazing, wonderful, gargantuan, because you have magic in your hands every day and no one ever realizes it.
No, think about it. 15 years ago, we didn't have smartphones. No. 10 years ago, I don't know that we did. Not to the extent we have.
And bitchy. People are bitchy when it hiccups or doesn't do exactly what they want it to.
Oh, yeah.
And like, man, have you read a newspaper? Do you even know what that is anymore? You have a magic wand in your hand that has the world at your fingertips at any given moment. You can make any kind of reservation in a hotel or anything that you want, and it's all in your pocket. It's got more computing power than the last NASA project had. And so kind of live your life with the respect for the time that you live in a little bit, and please, folks, stop bitching about your slow ass phone, because it's not slow. It's incredible.
It's only slow and compared to your friends who got the new one.
Yeah,
that's it. Go stand in line in an airport sometime. And have the audacity to bitch about the fact that you're climbing into a steel tube that is traveling at, you know...
Just shy of the speed of sound.
Just shy of the speed of sound at elevations above the tallest, you know, feature on Earth.
Possible obstacle it could have, you know, it's just
way up there. And you go, this meal is horrible.
We take delight in complaining about anything and everything, and no matter how integral and how impossible it seemed just a minute ago.
Yeah.
You know, like, if we got, you know, there's the hoax about the hoverboards that's out there.
If
we got hoverboards tomorrow, everyone would think it was great for that day. And then the next day they would be like, why don't they update these? Why do they have to go with that awful retro 80s look?
Right.
So, I just want people to be happy for the few minutes that they've got here on Earth, and I know that got really, you know...
Well, that's good advice, though, because, you know, you got to be careful for what you wish for. You really do.
For sure.
You know, people that wish that they had flying cars would get into one and probably be terrified.
Or meet their untimely demise because they were overconfident about their ability to operate the damn thing.
It ain't the Jetsons.
No.
No, not at all. Here's what's coming up on the next edition from Radioland.
Dirty D is with me, and we're brewing coffee.
Look, you know, you created, you know, what you did not realize at that time, maybe, you created a fucking monster. And, you know, we don't even know how big this is.
No.
Even to this, at this point.
No, we don't. I freely admit that. There's an old thing in this business. If there's a microphone around, watch your fucking mouth.
I try.
I do, too. But this is different, see? It says explicit on the podcast.
Yeah, so, yeah, and thank God. You know, otherwise I couldn't have been your guest.
Well, that's why I labeled it. When I built it, I did it that way intentionally because I knew you were going to be on.
Oh, you asshole. Last goddamn thing I wanted to do was actually have my own show. Oh, fuck you.
Well, you're not doing it by yourself.
I understand that. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Well, okay. Yes, you got a point there.
Radio Memphis is an internet broadcasting service provided by PirateRadioStudios.com, Memphis, Tennessee, USA.
Well, listen, my man, we got about an hour out of this.
Oh, cool. Well, it didn't feel like it. That went by very quickly.
Well, I just started recording and didn't really tell you when until, you know. That's how with Jeff and I sit here. One time, anytime you want to come back and do this, you're more than welcome to. I need you to meet Jeff. Now you haven't. You've only heard episode 4 and 3, and
right. And I haven't done 1 or 2.
One is Jeff. 2 is Brother Doug and Diane and others. There's another one. But of course, by the time this one gets released, there's another one with Jeff in there. Mm-hmm. And then I did one about the history of radio. So. And now we're on TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, and my blog site.
Very cool.
It's way cool. Yeah, I couldn't be thrilled about the way everything is going with this. I didn't think it was going to go as big as it did, but as they say, either you know go big or go home.
That's right.
But it's fun. It's cathartic for me.
Oh sure, it's like having a therapy session. It felt the same way for me. This is great.
Anytime you want to do it, man. I mean, you're right around the corner. You know, and dude, the guy that moved into the house,
mm-hmm.
did a bang up job of dressing this thing up. But I think he's got a love dungeon going on over there. I think I don't know. Hold on,
I'll be right back.
It's not like I hear, you know, odd bits of industrial machinery turning under there and screams in the night. Nothing like that, but you know, I understand that he put in a sauna. I think he's got like a gigantic wine cooler down there because his air conditioner ran throughout the wintertime.
Hmm.
Either that or he's a vampire. He likes it really, really cold. We just went through the coldest winter we had in 20 years and the air conditioner was running.
Welcome to my dungeon. Would you like to know the safe word?
Kumquat.
Bundeshausbildungsforderungsgesetz. You have to say it all.
Oh, that was one word. Holy cow. Yeah, absolutely. No, no. William did a great job with that place over there. In fact, he's got a Hieronymus Bush, Bosch, or a Hieronymus Bush. I mean, if he's got one of those, good God. He might want to go see an epidemiologist about that. But, yeah, take that back to art class.
Yes.
It's a touchdown. I'm going to shut up now before I really dig a deeper hole. Thank you, my friend, and we'll do it again soon. How about that?
No, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it very much.
Anytime, my man. Now I'm going to go take care of my Hieronymus Bush.